Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Comedy Arcade, part friendly panel show, part vicious competition, where contestants fight with their best anecdotes on mystery topics generated through a trusty bingo ball. I'm Vic Slayton, host of the show, spirit of the bingo balls, and games master. Points will be awarded for originality, amusement value, and my general caprice and mood on the day. The contestant with the most points at the end of the game wins, but their opponents will be granted a few cheat codes along the way, just to keep it interesting. Welcome to the Comedy Arcade. Thank you so much for joining me and thank you to the listeners for listening. It's like a seance. I don't know they're there, but I believe they are, and that's part of it. I've got a brilliant all-female, all-star panel today, and the rumours that I only do this podcast so I can meet comedians that I want to be my friends are in no way understated. So we'll start with the brilliant Alice Fraser. How are you?
Hello, I'm so well. I'm awake. I'm sitting up straight. What more could you want?
Because you are on a different time zone, aren't you?
Yes, but when I left the UK, which was only for 6 weeks back in March 2020, when I left the UK and then I decided I was going to stay in Australia, I first of all put all my stuff in storage in London, and second of all said that I would be available for all UK time zone things, which has led to a lot of lovely chats with people over Zoom and a lot of 4:30 a.m. alarm clocks.
Oh my god, do you miss all of your stuff, or have you now realized you don't need it so you might as well just throw it all away?
So I was brought up Buddhist, so I don't really miss my stuff, and B, even if I did miss my stuff, I'm not really allowed to miss my stuff. It would be right, okay. Ethically incorrect.
We'll ask no more questions about that then. My next guest, I last saw you live at the Funny Women final, and you were one of my picks to win, and the winner was also very good. So if she's listening, I also wanted you to win, but I genuinely thought you were absolutely fabulous. It's Charlie George. How are you doing?
I genuinely thought you were talking about someone else.
Yes, Shazia was in the 2018 Funny Women finals, don't you know? She likes to keep her hands in, and then
which says a lot about how I feel about myself, but also the reality that like most female comics that I know have done the Funny Women thing at some point. I know who you're talking about. Yeah, it was a really fun night, wasn't it? It was really, really good when we were back out doing stuff in was it Bloomsbury Theatre?
It was a really good night,
and I remember eating a lot of Percy Pigs backstage and feeling sick quite early on.
Oh, this is what I need to hear. This is like what the future holds for me, because I was like brand new at the time as well, and the standard was so high. It was like about 10 gigs in, I was like, why am I doing this? I can't do that. That's too good. But
oh no. Well, we were disgustingly supportive of each other backstage. To be honest, we forgot it was a competition. We were all just having so much fun. And it's kind of like that when you do some of the gigs. So I think Shelf were on the lineup as well, weren't they? And they're amazing. And they ran a night called The Lol Word, which I love. Because again, it's just like a bunch of women nattering backstage. And then we all gossip about what it's like doing normal gigs when there aren't so many women there and we're just alone.
All gigs.
Yeah, I always used to say the reason they don't book more than one woman on a gig is because once we get together, we start talking about the rapists.
Yeah, well, that's basically it. Also,
that's so
sometimes,
dumb, but like,
also sometimes we play rounders as well, which is something that I think we did backstage at Battersea Arts Centre. So, you know, outing rapists and playing our own sport that we much more enjoy is great. Yeah.
I did a gig the other day where there were more people called Russell on the bill than there were women. So, and I started the set by pointing that out, which was divisive, to say the least. But now it was like experiencing what it's like to be on a panel show without actually having to be on a panel show. It was very interesting. Interesting time. And I you do feel like you represent all women then. Because I thought, if these people don't think I'm funny, they're going to think all women aren't funny. And that is not true of the Russells. No consideration would be drawn on Russell as a comedian, as a genre, if they'd both been shit.
Russell as a genre. I'm down for Russell as a genre. I'm thinking now about which Russells you might mean, because there are a few. When you start to string them together, you're like, oh, there are a lot of Russells in comedy.
Yeah. I'm going to put this out far enough away that I can't match it back to the... Shazia Mirza, a comedy legend. How are you?
Hi.
How's your day been?
Oh, it's the same as yesterday and the day before and the day before that. I'm just sitting at home getting fat, grey and hairy. That's all I've been doing. Sitting on the settee in my pyjamas, fingering myself whilst watching the documentaries on Ted Bundy.
That is
the
dream.
I've watched them all. I've watched all the documentaries. Yorkshire Ripper, Ted Bundy, Boston Strangler. I've done them all, really. And it's strange because it brings me some comfort during this pandemic. It's such a weird thing.
It's really odd. I've heard that a few times where people are like, oh, I'm watching like the hardest prisons on earth and it's just really comforting right now. And it's like...
Because it makes me think, well, I'm alive.
Well, it could be worse, couldn't it? It could be worse.
I'm alive. And, you know, I'm eating like a horse. Things are going really well.
My best friend has a genre. We can never watch any television together because he has a genre of films that he likes to watch and television shows that he likes to watch that I like to call horrible people doing horrible things to other people. And it's sort of like sad sex workers of the cocaine underworld, or, you know, like, it's so depressing. I can't bear it.
I've got a chip missing in me as a woman, I think, because I'm not that interested in serial killers or having kids. So, like, I'm not ticking a lot of boxes here for women.
But the serial killers things, I see it as education and protection.
Definitely.
Because I see, oh, my God, that's how they work. Oh, my God, that's him next door. I just know, like, these are real people. Yeah. These are real men, and they could potentially be out there. And I feel like it's an education.
It's soothing, I find. It's weirdly soothing. I don't know why, because I've got into true crime as well, so stereotypical, but I do enjoy it. I do think there's something about feeling that I know. That, like, I at least I'm aware of the darkest kind, and then that sort of sets me in. But the thing is, though, is it's never, I don't know that it does work like that. It's probably the one who's being really sweet to you and telling you that they're a feminist that you really have.
That was Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
He was the nicest, most good looking lawyer. He was a lawyer.
Oh, yeah, they're very well known for their honesty and ethical code.
Shazia, are you abroad? Sorry, I have to ask this because it looks like you're somewhere really sunny. Are you abroad? Are you somewhere nice?
No. I'm in Hackney.
Have you just got a light on? It looks
like you're on a veranda somewhere. I was just like, maybe it's just where you are. You look like you're under the Tuscan sun or something. I was like, what? Jealous.
Right, we're gonna cover this off as part of the game because we are doing it as a bit of a speed round. So let's go. I've got balls, and it's a really soothing sound, actually. Right. So the first category is petty grievances. Who's got one? Or you can judge somebody else's petty grievance. Pour scorn on others for being petty. I'm quite a petty person, so. Basically, this is like therapy for me. I need to hear that other people are as bad as I am. Otherwise, I'll feel like I'm not a good person.
My petty grievance is particular kinds of emoji use. And I know that makes me sound like a snob, because I am not against the use of paralinguistic cues. Like, I think emojis are a beautiful way to add depth to the often flat emotionlessness affect of online speech. But the passive-aggressive use of the crying, laughing emoji makes me want to claw people's throats out with my hands.
Is it because you don't believe they're really crying with laughter?
It's because it's so snide. There's something about it that's just so Yeah, there's something about it that it carries so much emotional import of like, like there's something, such an awful emotional thing. I want you to know that I'm pretending to laugh heaps, but I'm actually not, and I'm doing this in order to make you feel bad. There's something, there's a whole network of emotional meaning behind the use of the crying laughing emoji that even when people are using it innocently, it makes me angry.
Do you ever deploy it yourself?
Never. Never. In fact, I once had some people helping me promote something, and I gave them login codes to my Instagram and Twitter, and I saw that one of their people had replied to somebody with a crying laughing emoji, and I rang the boss.
This is insane.
I said, this is not an emoji that I would ever use. Could you please ask your people to take it down?
That is... Oh, wow. You took action on that, though, and I love it. You didn't just silently see if you...
Yeah. I was so angry.
You took...
That's next practice. Level. But do you use emojis at all, that is?
I use... I occasionally use emojis. There's some that I will use because I think they are, as I said, like, I think they are a useful addition to the English language, particularly given that we do a lot of online kind of interactions.
What I think is really weird... I mean, it's okay because you're quite young, but... When old men use emojis, I find this so fucking bizarre. I've got this agent, and he's about 75, and he started sending me business emails, and then at the end, happy face. What? I was like, this is just not right. You are, how do you even know that you're not in this? You're out of it. You're past this. Smiling. And it was like my accountant, who's about 75, sent me an email with my tax return, what I owed at the end of the year. Then he put smiley face with green squirm coming out of it.
That's money coming out of the face, is it not? Spewing,
yeah,
is it?
It's like a yellow face, green sick.
Professional, like, oh my God, grown men.
You've got, oh, and no. I'm like, you're an accountant.
That's not good news from an accountant.
Two, you are 75 years old. This is a professional email. What's with the happy face, sad face, being sick at the end of it?
Also, what's the deal with your accounts that they're producing a vomit emoji? That's really concerning.
He must have scrolled through all the faces and thought, which one is appropriate? I've gone for that.
Outrageous.
Time is limited at that age. They should not be using emojis.
Yeah, he's wasting his own time there. Be more Alice. Feedback. Say, I don't want to see that. You're being paid for a service. I'm not interested in your opinion on my account.
I feel a lot of shame right now because I use emojis a lot and I really love them. And I'm probably really ridiculous with them. Sometimes I'll just communicate fully in emojis. I'm very childlike about it. And actually, I've been doing a lot of like Zoom quizzes with my niece, who's 6, because we really miss each other. We're sort of soul twins. And one of the quizzes that we do is when you do films, I realise this is the best bit about quizzes. I'm not really into Zoom quizzes, but in my support of emojis, I will say that when you have a round for emojis where you have to guess the film title and it's just in emojis, it's a very satisfying round.
That's
very
just communicating though, whereas like a smiley face or a being sick face adds no value to the sentence or what you're trying to say. It's like putting a smiley face at the end of a rude email to try and lighten the load.
Oh, yeah.
The passive-aggressive smiley face. No worries if not, but I will worry if not, and it's on you. Yeah. Sorry if you missed this email.
I think the core of the issue is the appropriate usage. If you're using it to convey meaning, if you're using it in a natural way, if you're using it, like, you know, properly, rather than passive-aggressively or weirdly
pretentiously. Did you pick up passive aggression in your time in the UK, Alice? Is that something that you came with, or did you learn it with us? Because we're not very honest people emotionally.
Look,
I'm feeling very seen right now because I'm quite passive aggressive. Yeah.
I am not. So this is my problem is I tend to take people at face value, maybe a little bit too much. So if someone goes, no, it's fine, I'm like, excellent. I'm so glad.
Oh, yeah, no, that's not what that means at all. Sometimes that means it's not fine.
Yeah. But if you want me to know that it's not fine, then you need to tell me it's not fine, because otherwise I'm going to assume it's fine.
Okay. Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah.
I've become more assertive recently, but I worry I've gone too far the other way. Because I used to be quite a pushover, and so to counterbalance that, I think now I take too hard a line and people don't really know what to do with it. I think they think I'm having some kind of crisis, but maybe I am.
Who is
both things can be true at the same time. So that was petty grievances. On we go.
Okay,
we have teenage behavior.
Oh dear. There's so much to choose from on teenage behavior, but this is really embarrassing, and I do feel deep shame. But I was actually on a Zoom interview for a job recently, which is like a normal interview, but like worse and more painful.
Oh,
because
so much.
No interview have you ever thought, I wish I could see my own face as I'm answering these questions. And they asked me, like, had I ever interviewed people before? Because there would be some kind of recruitment involved. And like, so they wanted an example of when I'd like searched for a candidate for something. And I panicked. And I didn't really have anything. And I started thinking about when we used to, outside the local Londis in Swindon, try and assess the right type of adult to buy us alcohol.
Not interview appropriate.
It wouldn't be the first time that I've had a breakdown in an interview and started talking about netball when they asked me about teamwork. I do this. But we had a really strong selection process where essentially we'd have to find the right type of person who looked immoral enough, like the type of person that would be okay with buying children booze. And so we kind of needed someone who was on the edge, but not too edgy, you know, not that they were going to take your money and then maybe buy the two bottles of cider and then drive off drinking them. Like, so you had to find someone in the right kind of level. And it was a big game that we played, trying to find the right kind of person. And we landed on like a middle-aged woman, because men can be a bit pervy, so that would be dangerous, because we were in our school uniform, obviously sat on the wall surveying them. So we went for divorcee. He's kind of given up buying bottles of wine anyway. And then we try and connect with her on a level as if, you know, we were her younger selves. Her to give us a bottle of wine, and then she'd become our hero.
This is such a well thought out strategy for getting booze. Like, you deserved it. Like, if you approached me with that marketing strategy, I'd buy you booze as a 36-year-old person. If I met you, maybe 13's a bit young, but I would certainly admire the...
What about 15? I think 15... You know, that's around the time that in another culture more sophisticated than our own, we might have had a glass of wine at the table. We just wanted a whole bottle of cider in the park. That's what we wanted.
Yeah, and you didn't know, because you hadn't experienced all the drinks, that you might have wanted a nice glass of wine, because no one allowed us to try. So
no, but we did get Blossom Hill off a divorcee. So, you know, the strategy worked.
Okay, so that's presumably not the anecdote you gave the interviewer.
Yeah.
Did you get the job?
No, it was like an online admin like recruitment type thing, so no, I didn't get the job. But to be honest, I don't think I really wanted the job. Like, this is a thing. Yeah,
you'd be suited to PR, because that's my actual job that pays money.
Is that what you do? Does PR do?
Just suggest things to people and make them think they thought of it at an evil level. But I don't typically do that. I do like personal finance stuff, which is thrilling, and I love it for anybody listening.
I don't think I'm suited to recruitment, unless you want me to find someone who will buy you alcohol and you're underage.
I feel like there's a market for that, but there's not a lot of money in it.
Maybe
but you're
not
pursuing comedy, so maybe money's not your end game. Anyway, what were you like as a teenager, Shazia? What was your vibe?
Oh, I was fucking awful. My parents, I hated them. And I was always running away from home. I was always escaping through the windows at midnight. And I used to do things like I watched The Dukes of Hazzard, and I saw that... they would escape places and use pillows in the shape of a body and leave that and leave that in a bed.
Classic.
So
Hollywood.
So I did that. I got some pillows in the shape of a body and I escaped through the window so that if my parents came in, it would look like I'm asleep. And I would run off to nightclubs and then just escape back in. I was always running away from home. I was so naughty. My parents were always getting called up to the school. I was always in detention. I was horrific. It was so bad that my parents sent me to a Roman Catholic school to discipline me. I'm Muslim, and they sent me. They sent me to a Roman Catholic primary school called Our Lady of Fatima, and where I was the only brown girl in the entire school, and I used to have to take Holy Communion and go to Mass every day, and I absolutely loved it. I loved it. They were drinking wine and having bread, and I was going up there doing things which I were not meant to do, and they used to play the guitar and sing hymns, and all my friends were Irish and Catholic, and they used to have the most bestest parties, and they used to invite me, and I loved it. I loved their culture, and I loved Catholicism.
That's so cool. Did you have nuns at your school? Yeah, because I've always wanted to be taught by nuns. My friend always talks about it.
And also the headmaster was a retired corporal army officer, and he was really strict. It was so strict that, and my parents sent me there because I was so naughty, and I think it did me really good, actually, the discipline. I think it really did me good. And actually, I loved Catholicism more than Islam, but I wasn't allowed to tell anybody because I didn't want to get into serious trouble. It was really, when I look back at it, I think it was really unusual for that to happen. And I was in Birmingham, a Roman Catholic school in Birmingham. I mean...
Wow. So it put you back on the straight and narrow.
It did. Honestly, that's when I started giving to charity instead of stealing. I was a terrible child because I used to steal a lot. When the kids were in class, I would go through their bags and steal their packed lunches.
Wow.
I was just for the
thrill of it, or just because your lunch?
I actually ate it all. Because I felt that my mum made shit sandwiches. And so the English girls had better lunches. So I stole them and ate them. So I actually, after going to Roman Catholic school, I realised how awful I was as a person, as a child. And I got better. I stopped stealing. And I started forgiving people and not telling lies and being a better child. And I think I became a better adult because of that.
Wow. That's so cool. Amazing. What were you like as a teenager, Alice?
I was upsettingly well-behaved as a teenager. I was, not exactly. I didn't really do any work in school. I would just read novels under the desk, but I kept my head down and never got in trouble, ever. Because my mum was sick, so I was looking after her at home, so I didn't want to rock the boat. So all of my rebellions were internal. I had a very miserable time at high school. I was badly bullied and I had no friends because I was undeniably a very weird kid.
That worked out okay, all that internalised trauma. Now you're an excellent comedian. Sometimes the cliches are true.
I think I need to go to Catholic school and be straightened out, to be honest. like hearing your story, that does make me think that.
I think it might be too late for you, Charlie. I don't know your exact age, but unless you were going back to be a teacher.
Let's do a 21 Jump Street scenario and send you back to high school as a nun.
Yeah. Or never been kissed, a slightly more lighthearted one. Well, I say lighthearted, but that story was all about how an adult posing as a teenager, a child, seduced a teacher, which is harrowing, if you put it that way.
Yeah, deeply upsetting. No movies in the 90s were okay. None.
Yeah, no, you look at any of them and they're proper dodged.
90s. I don't want to watch any of them in case they're ruined for me. People are like, I can't even watch Mean Girls. I'm like, I'm sure there's some really problematic stuff in there that I don't need to see. But anyway, the ball continues. Okay. Unpopular opinions. I mean, we've covered one already about emoji use, but
I have a whole podcast called Tea with Alice where I ask people to come on and talk about difficult ideas.
difficult ideas. That's another way of articulating it.
Well, it's not so much, yeah, just things that they're not sure about or they feel uncertain about, because I think there's too many people in the world who are too certain of themselves. And maybe that's a slightly unpopular opinion, is that I think even if you're right, you shouldn't be as smug about it as you probably are. I think reserving space for uncertainty is very important.
I don't know. I think that would be very popular, but I don't think anybody would want to talk about it. Like, I think it's a secret popular opinion that you have when you see people and they're like, yeah, genuinely, I am who I am. Take me or leave me. I'm like, well, I know what I'm going to do. It's a leave for me, but I respect that energy.
I don't know if the thing that I have is an unpopular opinion. And then I get quite anxious because I think, oh, maybe I do have too many popular opinions, and I try
to mainstream like, Charlie
think critically, and then I'm like, oh no, people definitely think I'm weird. Like, I like stuff like due process. Like, I don't think we should just get rid of someone if they're bad. Like, what I'm saying is I still really want to listen to the Smiths even though Morris Dean's bad, but I promise not to enjoy them. Like, stuff like that, you know, like, because it's really tricky, isn't it, where like you become so moralistic that you have to completely discard someone. So I think that art and artist thing still gets me, because I can still really appreciate the beauty of a film or see something in the context of its time and like that. And I feel like I'm kind of supposed to just completely cut away things that are negative. But then I feel like, oh, I probably just have to get rid of loads of my own family and like myself and everyone if I started doing that. So, yeah, I feel like we can kind of need like some kind of app that you would scan and that would tell you what percentage something is bad. And then we could decide whether
scale,
or not you'd
hold
it out like that Shazam thing where it tells you the name of the song, but this would tell me like how socially acceptable this thing is, and then I can make an informed choice, you know, like do I want to participate. But it shouldn't be to do with socially acceptable, but I think it's like,
yeah,
it's tricky, isn't it? Because if Michael Jackson comes on the dance floor, do you run away because of what we now know, or do you, you know, is it Jackson 5, is it okay, you know?
You're exactly right. And I think I do notice that. And you do see that a lot on Twitter, people who are looking to find fault in things. Like, Grease was on the other day, and a lot of people had a lot of opinions about the film Grease. And it is of its time, and it's a bit of a time capsule. And you kind of have to take it in the spirit it's intended. No one's going to make you watch it, but we can't go back 20 years and have it refilmed.
What were people upset about? The quiffs or the...
Just there are loads of problematic behaviour in it if you want to look for it. But it's just like, who's got the energy to be angry about something that was filmed so long ago? Like, enjoy it, don't watch it. I don't need to hear about it.
Go on, Alice.
So I have two things to say about this. The first one is, there's a really nice bit in Jonathan Haidt essay, Haidt, about the idea that we, in the modern world, we tend to think of reading or absorbing art as bringing it into ourselves. And therefore, the idea that if it's bad or if it's associated with badness, then it sort of pollutes us. If it has bad ideas in us, then we get polluted. Whereas maybe a more useful way to approach it would be to think of yourself as traveling into the book, like a time traveler, or into the movie. And then you can go there and you can observe it and be like, oh, that's interesting. I don't agree with that. I think that's stupid. I think that's ugly. And then you extract yourself, but you're not in some way that the modern discussion about art is as though we are being polluted or toxified by contact with it, which is not my experience of art, actually. That's not how I feel when I come across a book where, you know, you get three paragraphs in and all of a sudden they're like, ooh, the nasty Jew, and you're like, you know, like, yeah. you can go, okay, I see where that's coming from, and I don't know.
It's giving you more autonomy, isn't it, as the person traveling through, right? Like, you have an autonomous choice of like how you're engaging. Like, you are just viewing it kind of like walking around a gallery, like you're saying, instead of feeling that by association you've somehow got a connection to that thing directly. Like,
yeah, yeah, reading Robinson Crusoe doesn't make me racist. Like,
yeah, yeah, totally.
That's such an enlightened, good way of thinking about stuff. I feel like I'm better for that information, Alice. So thanks for sharing it. Right, I think we've got time for like one more category now. Okay, we're going to talk about travel. And I know Shazzy's got stories about travel because I watched some of Bear Grylls' Islands.
Oh, God. Yes. Bear Grylls.
Were you on Bear Grylls? Did you do a show with Bear Grylls?
Did he drink your urine?
Yeah.
No, but we were starving to death on a desert island for a month. And that's what he did. He just
literally that's what he did.
He dropped us off, 10 of us on an island for a month with no food, no clothes apart from the clothes we were wearing, no mobile phone, no computer, nothing. We had nothing, and we had to survive for a month. Half the people didn't survive, obviously. But it was fine.
They didn't die. This was on television.
No, they didn't die. To be clear, they just didn't see out the month.
They went home.
They called. We had
home to God's arms.
We had.
Stop it.
Well, we had. We had on the neighbouring island these army officers that if we got into trouble or if you wanted to leave, they would come and rescue us. But we had a terrible time. There was tsunamis. I got attacked by a stingray. There was tsunamis. There was thunder. We had hypothermia. We were getting bitten by sandflies and mosquitoes every day. It was horrific. And we all lost 2 stone. And there was 5 men and 5 women. And in the end, what survived was 4 women and 2 men. And Bear Grylls always says this, that women are better survivors than men, because that's what we've had to do in our life to survive. You know, sexism, bigotry, periods, childbirth. We've always had to face pain and obstacles, and we've had no choice but to get on with it. So when women are in a survival situation, they naturally just get on with it and they survive better than men. And that's what we women did. We just got on with it. And it was difficult, but we just got on with it. Whereas the men sat around and they were really let it affect them mentally and physically. They were crying. They wanted to go home. They just found it really hard. And a survival situation, we're in a pandemic, it's the same thing, is mind over matter. Because we have enough food, we have enough drink, we know we're going to survive physically. The rest of it is mind over matter, and it's keeping busy, visualizing the end result, visualizing the end of something. You're going to get through this, and that's what we did as women. We had very strong minds about it, and that's why I think we survived. I survived because I kept myself busy. I gave myself a job, which was fishing. And I'd never fished in my life, never caught a fish in my life. But on the island, I caught over 200 fish.
That's insane.
But that was
amazing.
I gave myself a task to do. This is what I'm a good swimmer, so I loved being in the sea. And I just thought, right, I'm going to make this my job. I'm going to catch fish. I'm going to try and catch fish. And if you do something for long enough, you will get good at it, which is why I'm still in comedy. And the thing is, I gave myself that job about the fish, and I thought, I'm going to do it. And I was terrible in the beginning. We were starving. We never ate for 7 days. We didn't have anything. But then...
God, did you just catch them with your bare hands?
I built a net.
So cool.
In the sea.
It's the most badass
thing. I built a net in the sea and locked it down with rocks so that it wouldn't move with the ocean. And I would put bits of paper that we went foraging on the beach. I'd found bits of foil. And I know that fish are attracted to shiny things. So I put the foil in the net, which attracted the fish. And then the fish would get stuck in the net. So when I'd wake up in the morning and I'd swim out to sea, there'd be loads of these fish in the net. And I'd pull them out and we'd eat them for breakfast. And really bad. And after that horrific experience, and it was horrific, but it was life-changing. Because when you come close to death in any way, or you see death, or you've experienced some awful thing, it can only give you kind of a zest for life, that you have things to live for and survive anything. Oh my God, I can get through this.
And you came back and still continued to pursue comedy.
I did. I came back.
Knowing all of that.
But I knew after that I could probably get through anything in my life.
That's so cool.
But
were there any moments of like proper levity, or were you so ill and happy you got past?
I slipped on some algae and I cracked my head on some rocks, and the paramedics flew in, and I lost consciousness, and I couldn't breathe. I didn't know where I was. And then I came round and I felt really ill. And then a few days later I was attacked by a stingray. And then we were, all of us had hypothermia. I mean, it was so awful.
They paid for this.
But they paid it.
Not enough.
Inappropriate.
It was Channel 4.
Because this is...
It was for Channel 4.
Not enough. So you know it's...
They put this on television. Like, this is insane. Like, what your sounds like is happening to you.
But like, Josie Long, who did the series before, told me to do it. Because she said to me, it's a life-changing experience. And it is. But it's any life-changing experience is not good. It's horrific. And that's why it's life-changing. Because it has an awful impact on you that you never forget. And Josie said to me, it's awful, I'm warning you, but you have to do it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. You have to do it. And I was prepared. And so I was prepared for it being awful, but you don't know how awful it is till you're living through it. It's like when people tell you about a pandemic and you go, yeah, that sounds awful. And then you're living through it. It's different.
Well, I'm going to take your word for it, because I cannot imagine... I can't imagine getting on a plane knowing that that was what was on the other end for me. But anyway, any more fun stuff about travel? I mean, no one's had that experience.
That was in Panama.
Really hard story.
That was in Panama.
That's where you were, in Panama. Now, I feel like they should do... All I feel, like, none of my travel experiences are worth sharing at all. But I just feel they should change that saying about give a man a fish, and they should make it... Give Shazia a net. And then that's how you get your fish.
And she will feed a whole island of soap stars and celebrities.
Resilient.
Such resilience. Alice, you must do a fair bit of travel prior to lockdown.
Yes, prior to the pandemic, I was always going one place or another. So it's been very strange to be in a place for a whole year, and looks like probably another year to come. Although I do have a tour booked in the UK in November of this year, and they keep tweeting about it once a week. They tweet about it, and I feel like,
very optimistic.
Yeah, I feel like, should I retweet this, or is that just, or should I just, like, if I don't know if November is going to be travelable. I mean, it is still illegal for me to leave the country. To leave Australia without special permission. There are still 40,000 Australians around the world trying to get home as well. So even if I could leave, getting back would be an issue. So big questions to face, I think.
Well, we want you back. So,
I would love to come back. I would love to come back. That's the goal. That's the plan.
Cool. Well, we have reached the end. So while I tot up it's really basic maths, but it takes me a surprisingly long time. Let's go around and find out where we can see everybody. So we'll start with you, Alice. Where can we find you? What are you making in lockdown that we can see?
Well, I have a special on Amazon Prime called Savage. I have a weekly podcast called The Gargle coming out under the umbrella of The Bugle podcast. If you're listening to The Bugle podcast, it'll be a weekly satirical news show that has nothing to do with politics, because I never want to write another Trump joke. And I also have a weekly podcast called Tea with Alice, where I talk about difficult ideas with interesting people.
Cool. Charlie, what are you up to? Not recruitment?
No, not recruitment. Thank God. No, I've managed to find some other temporary work. I have a podcast on Audible with an anthropologist, Marianne Ojota, that's really fun, where we talk to different scientists and we try stuff out, and experts, and we try it out and see if it can help us improve our lives. So, well-being podcast on Audible called Happiness and How to Get It. And coming up soon, I'm going to do an online show as part of the amazing Catherine Bohart's Gig Fest, which people can buy tickets for online. So I'll just be doing like a split bill, like 20 minutes.
And Chelsea, where can we find you?
You can find
me in your house.
In my house, getting fat and grey and hairy. I'm on tour. I've been trying to be on tour since March 2020, and it keeps getting delayed and delayed. But apparently I will be on tour sometime this year. I'm doing Sarah Millican's show next month, Comedy Playground, trying out new material. Oh, awesome. And that's it.
Perfect. Well, thank you all for playing. Shazzy, you had to be the winner. Oh, no. I'm sorry. You learned to fish and fed an island. So as soon as, you're an absolute warrior. So
I won't fight that.
Thank you.
It's a worthy win. I think we would all agree. But it was, this has been an absolute joy. You never know how these are going to go because the panel's different every time, but I've had such a lovely time. And I've also learned things, which is rare. So thank you so much for coming. You are now absolutely free to go. And thank you to the listeners for listening. Thanks for listening to The Comedy Arcade. There'll be a new episode next Thursday with new balls and new guests. If you liked it, like us any way you can and subscribe and tell all your friends. Also, tell us. We're in all the usual places on all the social media. And if you didn't, this is Women Talking Bollocks. Maureen, where are you going?
Hello, Comedy Arcade listeners. I'm Barry Maxtay.
I'm Ben Vanderveld.
And we'd love you to listen to Worst Foot Forward, our podcast all about failure.
Each week we are joined by a guest to discuss the world's worst something, from detective to invasion, train to horror movie. We dive into humankind's darkest depths in search of the absolute pits.
Many Comedy Arcade guests have appeared in our show, with the likes of Suze Kempner crooning about the world's worst divas, Tiernan Duyeb holding a placard at the world's worst political protest, and John-Luke Roberts telling us definitively the world's worst joke.
On Worst Foot Forward, we've learned that conspiracy theorists think rocks aren't really hard, why one French physicist invaded the Channel Island of Sark, and how exactly to make a wasp gun.
While also uncovering the railway station of the dead, the doctor who put goat balls into human scrotums, and the musical funded by bird poo.
Subscribe to Worst Foot Forward on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Check out our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com, and join us for some fun-filled zero worship.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.